Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
Hi, welcome to my podcast. I'm so happy to have you. It is May 21st, 2020, and today my guest is Araceli Panameño, and she is one of my dear friends, and I absolutely love her. She lives in D.C., and she is Director of Latino Affairs at the Center for Responsible Lending. I consider her one of the experts in financing and wealth building in the Latino community, as well as she's very knowledgeable about what's going on in the Black community. And as you all know, wealth building is one of the pillars of success for the Black and Brown communities, that we've got to be knowledgeable and educated on our personal finances, how to build wealth in our community, how to build homes, how to purchase homes, home buying, and home lending, because that owning a home is one of the basis of building wealth in the Black and Brown communities. For most of us, it's the biggest investment we will make. We also know we spend more money in educating our children because we end up having to take out a lot of loans. She's also knowledgeable about payday lending and banking services and just everything we need to know about financial education. So I'm so glad to have her here today so we can become educated on how we can build wealth in the Black and Brown communities. So she's going to talk about her personal and professional trajectory and how she got into her work, and just giving us some knowledge and giving us some advice on how to build wealth. Hi, Araceli. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I am so happy to be here with you. You are one of my dearest friends. We've known each other for quite a while and have been able to collaborate for quite some time. One of the things that I want to share with you is that I actually keep more of an active membership in a Black organization than I do in a Latino organization. So I'm a dues-paying member. And very active member of my local unit in Prince William County, Virginia, of the NAACP, and lead the Economic Development Committee there with a group of other activists in the NAACP organization. So much more so than I do, pay dues or act at a local level with any other organization, including Latino organizations. So
that's very that's very interesting to know, because, you know, I'm a big advocate of Black-Brown relations and us working together to address issues that face both of our communities. So for you to be a member of the NAACP and one of the leaders of their financial committee, wealth building, whatever the title of the committee is very interesting, because that means, you know, you have some direct knowledge about, you know, what it means to be a Latina working in a Black organization, and also just understanding a big understanding of not only issues within the Latino community, but the African-American community as well.
So I think that one of the other things that I'd like to share is that as a person of Latino descent, of immigrant descent to the United States, my family is actually multiracial. So there are white people in my family. There are people of mestizo descent, such as myself. And there are also Black people in my family. My own descendants are Black. And so for me, there is no such differentiation between Black and Brown. That is the reality that rules my world. That is my everyday life. So at any rate, just wanted to share that with you. I get to face, you know, the conflicts that we see play out in our society. I get to face those at the dining table and during holidays with my Republican white twisted totally confused relatives.
It's funny you say that, because I have some black ones in my family who are Republican and this and that and supporters of Trump. That's a whole nother conversation.
Like, don't be telling them your last name. TikTokers are going to try to deport you despite the fact that you are U.S. born, right? Mm-hmm. Right? If you have a different look, we get to be stopped and questioned and frisked and thrown in jail and put in detention centers, and people will even attempt to deport us.
Yes. So, yes.
All of this is part of my reality. You know, the idea of my daughter or my son-in-law or my grandchildren going outside of the house and having to worry about whether or not they will be stopped by the police. That's real for me, right? The conversation of what do you do if the police stops you? You know, don't make any frisk movements. If anything, call me, right? Call me immediately, because I'm going to move heaven and earth to try to help you out. So at any rate, oh my God.
This is a reality. And so with that being said, so, Araceli, you know that this whole COVID-19 experience has been extremely difficult and detrimental to the African-American and Latino communities in every way. But could you speak to that in terms of the issues we're facing financially in our communities?
So it's quite interesting, because it's a health crisis. And in the health crisis clears the fog of the fake access, the fake access to wealth building and financial security for people of color. The reality is that no high cost loan, whether it is a payday loan or whether it is a mortgage loan or an auto loan or a student loan, no loan can actually contribute to wealth building, because it's debt that has to be repaid. And if it is higher cost, even prime cost is expensive, but higher cost debt, and those of us who happen to be people of color who have not had access and have been redlined from capital markets, it's sort of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. We have not been given access to capital markets, therefore we have no access to fair terms of credit. And so therefore we cannot leverage, right? The thing about, for example, if we want to talk about building wealth, the thing about buying a home with a mortgage is that at the end of paying this particular debt, you have a significant asset that you own. Whereas if you buy a car with a high cost loan, this is a depreciating asset that has an expected life, useful life. And so you're not building wealth by buying things with debt, things that you consume, consumer debt, things that you put on open credit cards, or things that you can access or buy with other types of consumer loans, including payday loans, where the interest rate can be upwards of 300% APR. I mean, just that number. Any number that is, above prime rates at this point is high. So at any rate, so that right. That is on what you do and what you cannot do with money, right? But here we have a situation where we have a virus that is invisible, that is, to some degree, it's an equalizing factor because it doesn't discriminate, right? So it doesn't matter what your politics are. It doesn't matter what your race, ethnicity is. But what matters, this is where the connection of financial security and wealth comes in, right? If you have wealth and you have financial security, you are more likely to be able to shelter in place and not worry about whether or not you will be able to pay rent or mortgage, or whether or not you'll be able to put food on the table, or whether or not you have to be facing the public. Whereas most Black and Latino workers in this economy are hourly wage workers who have to be facing the public constantly, whether they are bus drivers or whether they are picking up the trash, or whether they are working for the utility company, or whether they are undocumented immigrants working in farm fields, right? The irony of having to be labeled essential worker, and yet, in the case of undocumented immigrants, simultaneously be called illegal, simultaneously be called or referred to as something that can be thrown away, expendable, right? And so somebody who doesn't have the wages, even the hazard pay, I happen to have relatives. This is not a distant reality for me. I happen to have relatives who work in one of those retail stores that are considered essential in the economy and make hourly wages. And the hazard pay that they got was a temporary increase of $2 per hour for 2 months that at this point is now being canceled. But the virus is still out there, right? And so at any rate, back to the point of they make the less or the least in terms of the financial gains that they get in terms of income, right? So they make the least money at the greatest expense to their health and their lives, not only personally speaking, but also to their families. If they have to be firefighters and police officers and God forbid, be in a clinical setting, actually delivering care, right? Such as the case of DACA recipients. There is over 20,000 DACA recipients in the state of New York who are actually serving as nurses, nurse practitioners, clinicians, doctors, actually, you know, at the front lines of a pandemic. And yet, from an administrative standpoint and from a policy standpoint, there is this questioning as to whether or not they are deserving of an economic stimulus. I don't know anybody of immigrant descent who does not live in a mixed household. And yet, the CARES Act, which is the legislation that was passed by the U.S. Congress, which it approved a $1,200 stimulus payment to individuals, $2,400 for couples who file jointly, and an additional $500 payment up to three for dependents who are younger than 18 years of age. But if you are in a mixed household where one individual might have an undocumented status, even if they are taxpayers because they work and they have an individual tax identification number, which means that they actually pay federal taxes, they pay FICA taxes, Social Security taxes, unemployment insurance, etc. All of these things that contribute to a social safety net that they can never, ever expect to benefit from. Even if they do that, the national legislation says that that household cannot benefit from any of the economic stimulus pieces included in that relief bill. How unjust is that? Right? So these are the folks, and the same thing is true for African Americans, right? They happen to have, Latinos and African Americans happen to have those jobs in our economy that are deemed and considered essential, but that have the lowest level of pay and benefits associated with them. So they're risking their lives, but they cannot afford to say, no, I will work from home, because their job cannot be done from home.
So Araceli, thank you for that extended explanation on the situation with workers and the and families, and how the whole COVID affects our communities. But we also are not just victims, but we're also agents, right? So what solutions do you propose for these communities and what they should do? In terms of dealing with all the issues that they are facing now financially?
Being an agent has a great deal of requirement of us, right? It carries a set of responsibilities. We cannot just be recipients of benefits that are designated to us through legislation or administrative rules and procedures by governments at the state, federal, and local level, right? In order for those to be just, we actually have to engage. So we have to actually do our job and find out what is it that our local, state, and federal government is doing, and analyze how that is going to impact our lives and raise our voices. Because if there is something we have that is obviously ours and nobody can take away, is our freedom to petition our government and our freedom of speech, right? And so we have the obligation to actually communicate. So I can't sit here and complain about whatever the government is requiring me to do if I am not engaging my government in those policies, if I am not trying to engage with my fellow Americans, whether it is through my membership at the NAACP at the local level or my affiliation with other organizations at the state and federal level, trying to understand these policies and then not convey my views to those who claim to represent me. Even if they are not of my political affiliation, right? It is my duty and my obligation. I think, and as an enfranchised citizen, I think I have a double duty to speak for those who cannot speak for themselves. Particularly for me, it's a tremendous obligation because I am of immigrant descent. I don't take my citizenship lightly. I cannot afford not to speak. I cannot afford, every time I go to the grocery store and I am looking for oranges or bananas or strawberries or beans or whatever it is, I know that the labor that goes into those crops, and I know that the people that are actually harvesting and planting those crops are people who have less rights than I do. And so I am obligated. Otherwise, you know what? From a very economic standpoint, it's going to hit my pocket, right? Because the cost of everything right now is up. The cost of meat has gone up. The cost of all fresh fruits and vegetables has gone up. we don't have enough immigrant labor out in the fields to actually harvest the foods that are already ripe for harvesting. Those are immigrants. Even at a time where you have nearly 40 million unemployed people today, right? 40 million unemployed people today. Among those folks, hardly anybody wants to go work in the fields to harvest the very food we consume and we put on our table. And so, you know, if immigrants, undocumented immigrants, can't speak for themselves, from a human standpoint, I'd be damned if I couldn't speak for them and advocate on their behalf. But then also from a consumer and economic standpoint, I have an interest in them being here, and I have an interest in their well-being, because we are as healthy and as strong of a nation as the least among us are healthy and strong.
And that's so true. What happens to one of us happens to all of us. We cannot separate our society. If you think that, it's the poor people and the people of color who are getting this disease, but yet you're going to come in contact with them every day in terms of essential workers, and you think you're totally protected from the virus, that's untrue. That's an untrue belief. Because
who takes care of senior citizens
exactly,
in nursing homes?
Exactly. Who works in the hospitals? You know, who
takes care of our children's in daycare centers?
Exactly. Who educates our children? Who works in the cafeterias?
Who drives the buses that we have to ride in the subway trains that we have to ride to get to our offices?
Mm-hmm. Who puts up the lights in our streets? Who are the construction workers? We come in contact with them all the time. And so we have to be, as Americans, we have to be diligent about making sure that all people have a right to great health care, great health, great wages, and so that they can live as human beings. You know, everybody has a right to live in dignity and respect. I really appreciate, Araceli, for you joining us and educating us on the whole COVID and how it is affecting our communities and what we can do in order to address these issues. And also, just thank you so much for bringing the experience of the non-documented immigrants to the attention of this audience, because they are individuals, families, communities that we also need to be thinking about and addressing their issues as well.
Many of them are parents of citizen children.
Yes. Yes. And the whole... Go ahead.
And Ramona, the other thing I want to say is that, you know, it is incumbent upon us to continue to be engaged, because our Congress is continuing to work on legislation. Today, as you and I speak, they are continuing to debate those programs that are providing assistance to small businesses. There is a legislation already pending that we are expecting to be voted on next week by the Senate and the House. And so it is incumbent upon us, whether we are small business owners or whether we are employees of small business owners, it is incumbent upon us to find out what is it that the Congress is doing and how it's going to impact our ability to work in bring home a decent wage to take care of our families.
Thank you so much. And we will make sure that we stay abreast of everything that's going on in Congress. We will also make sure that we are knowledgeable and engaged in the whole political process, especially with this being an election year as well. So thank you so much, Araceli, for joining us. And will you come back? We didn't get to everything we wanted to talk about. So hope to have you as a guest again soon.
It's lovely to be with you. Always a pleasure. Happy to be back with you. anytime.
Thank you, Araceli. And if people want to be in touch with you and learn more about your work, do you have a website or any social media channels where they can follow you on?
I am on Twitter, so you can search for Araceli Panameño, and you will find me. Or you can also go to the website of the organization I work for, the Center for Responsible Lending, and you can find me there as well. And you'll be able to find my email address there as well.
Thank you. And could you give our audience the spelling of your name? You have this great accent that they might not have understood how to spell your name. And Araceli Panameño is not a common name. So give them your spelling so they can find you on Twitter.
So Araceli, Araceli .Panameño.
Thank you, Araceli. Okay, looking forward to seeing you again soon. Abrazos.
Igual. Take care. Bye.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Tarion Gully, theme song. NADWORKS, digital support. And, of course, our featured guest.